This is Jim Inkster. You are listening to Talk Louisiana. Signature support is from the office of Mayor President Sharon Weston Broom of East Baton Rouge Parish. And the show originates from the Investar Tower in Baton Rouge. We begin with Louis Wren, 18 years head of the Louisiana AFL-CIO, the state's largest labor union. And back in the day, when Victor Busey was there, lawmakers were largely in accord with the AFL-CIO, and it quite likely was the most prominent player in Louisiana politics. Today, as we know, labor unions have not been as active in politics, but part of that is that Democrats are not winning races in Louisiana the way they used to, and the Republican majority is largely of a different mind, and that includes the governor, Jeff Landry. So we start with a cluster of 15 proposed laws. James Finn of The Advocate had a fine story 2 days ago. Those laws, if they were to pass, take aim at public sector unions' ability to bargain with employees, system for compensating workers sidelined by injury, and a requirement that child laborers must receive lunch breaks. Others would cut employment benefits and limit how much doctors can make when treating people for workers' compensation claims. So there are a bunch of bills in the offing, and it's Louis Wren's job to follow every one of them. And if you'd like to join the conversation, 877-217-5757. Our email address is talk@talklouisiana.org. What's your assessment of what's happening at the Capitol?
Well, good morning, Jim. And before we start, I want to congratulate you on being inducted into the Political Hall of Fame.
It hasn't happened yet.
Well,
hopefully they won't change their mind.
The program's printed. I already saw it. Your name is on it. So congratulations on that.
Well, thank you. That is quite an honor.
Yeah, it's busy down at the state capitol. You know, this is part of what we've seen some of these bills for many years now. They haven't really moved along. It's kind of a trend in the South. We've seen it done in Florida, Alabama. I don't know that we want to be like those, but, you know, I'm amazed the Supreme Court ruled that corporations were people and their contributions were free speech. And yesterday, Liz Merle said that it's very threatening when the federal government uses the power and authority to block people from exercising their freedom of speech. But that doesn't seem to bother them when it comes to union members in the way that they have their free speech, have their representation. As I told the man in the article, you go to the Capitol, the insurance company's got a lot of people, the chemical association have a lot of people, all of the corporations and the businesses. But they really want to interrupt the financial structure that allows working men and women to have a voice in the process. You know, school teachers got to go to school. They got to go teach their students. The union is the way that they get their side of the story told at the state capitol. And this really seems to just want to infringe on their freedom of speech and in their way that they get their side of the story heard at the state capitol.
I'm told there are five different bills that would, if passed, dismantle powers currently held by public sector unions, including teacher unions. One would outlaw collective bargaining for teachers and some other groups, such as the city workers in New Orleans, although not for police and firefighters organizations. And then there are some others that would make it more difficult for unions to collect dues through payroll deductions and to require new union elections every 2 years. So let's start in reverse order. What about having union elections every 2 years?
Unions often have elections. They elect their leadership.
But a requirement.
Well, the requirement is that they have a union election. In the public sector, the members don't actually vote on whether there's a collective bargaining agreement. The governing body votes. So anytime the city council of Baton Rouge wanted to decide that they would like to reconsider the issue of a collective bargaining agreement with the policemen, the firemen, there's no time limit on that. They can do it now. Mm-hmm. They could do it once a month. They could do it every other year. They could do it every 5 years. The right to have the collective bargaining agreement is with the governing authority.
All right. Well, what about, this is not a new one, but making it harder for unions to collect dues with payroll deductions.
Well, I mean, it's obviously just an attempt to put financial restraints on their organization. Nobody's forced to have payroll deduction. Each individual has to sign a piece of paper and say, I authorize you to take my money out of my check and pay it, mm-hmm. along with the other 600 deductions that they do. And you find it amazing, no school board, no city government, no state agency has ever come to the Capitol and said, oh, we need to get rid of this because of the problem. They simply say, it's push a button. We do it for, you know, all these other reasons. And it really is, it doesn't take time. It doesn't take money. It's not a big deal to the payroll departments. The only people who've ever come to the Capitol and testify this is needed is Lobby. They don't collect union dues. It's really not a problem for them.
877-217-5757. What about collective bargaining? There are measures that are being debated that would do away with it in many cases, particularly for teachers.
There are not but a handful of teachers' unions who actually have a collective bargaining agreement. I don't know what the big push is.
Is it designed to eviscerate unions?
Yes. I mean, I don't think anybody's going to. If you look at Mr. Cruz's comments, why he exempted the fire and police. Oh, well, they have too much political clout. I don't want to fight with them yet. I'm going to pick off the weakest in the herd, and then we'll go from there. Nobody's under the illusion that they wouldn't like to do it to all. You know, how dare you poor working people come up here and think you should have opinion in how the government works? Well, we need to, the rich folks telling us how to do this.
877-217-5757 for Louis Wren, president of the Louisiana AFL-CIO. His organization represents both public and private sector.
Correct.
Employees. Mike in Villa Del Rey. Mike, you're on. Good morning, sir.
Good morning, Jim. Congratulations on that Hall of Fame deal.
Thank you.
You're the GOAT, in my opinion, buddy. Louis, could you just be straight up honest and say this MAGA movement is just a union busting operation? That's all I got.
Well, good morning, Mike. And I don't think I've ever been anything but completely honest with you. I think the MAGA movement is more people who are being sold a pig and a poke. There are a lot of working people who are buying into it. I think that's as much the frustration that they see in being left behind in today's economy. The gentleman who's running that is very good showman. He knows how to tap into people's emotions and then get them riled up. I don't think most of them ever sit down and think about whether it is really proposing. I asked some lady who told me she was a big Trump fan. Said, you know, that's America. It's great. You get to pick your candidate. Tell me what he did for you. She said, what do you mean? He was president for 4 years. What did he do to make your life better? She goes, I never thought of that. I don't know what else there is to think about.
877-217-5757. Phil in Jefferson Terrace. Hi, Phil. You're on with Louis Wren.
Yes, good morning, sir. I'm a member of a union. The unions are the only way the working people are going to get any of our rights, and they've been eroded steadily like over the past 40 to 50 years. I mean, look at the Supreme Court. There are 435 millionaires in Congress right now, and they want us to stay on the plantation and not ask any questions.
Well, it's always amazed me. Well, first of all, thanks for calling. Good morning. A collective bargaining agreement is nothing more than an employment agreement. It states both sides what you will give and what you'll get. Mm-hmm. You know, this is what you expect me to do as an employee. This is what the company promises they'll give me as an employee.
All right.
Almost every CEO wants an employment agreement. Well, the big boys want one. When workers say, well, look, just give me the same deal. You know, tell me what the work rules are. Tell me what the pay is. Let's have an agreement in writing up front. Both sides know what's doing. There are a lot of employers that like it. Tennessee is a prime example. Volkswagen is used to having a union. It's how they do their labor management. They built the plant in Tennessee. They were going to recognize the union. And the government in Tennessee says, if you agree to this, we're going to claw back all our tax incentives. It cost Tennessee the second Volkswagen plant. They moved. There's a bill in Georgia. Do the same thing. If you agree to be unionized, then we're going to take back all your tax exemptions. Well, that doesn't make any sense. The whole idea of the tax exemptions were to provide jobs with good pay.
You're listening to Lewis Wren, head of the AFL-CIO. Your number is 877-217-5757. This is Jim Inkster. Thank you for joining us for Talk Louisiana. Robin Dow producing, and your number is 877-217-5757. Lewis Wren, who's headed the Louisiana AFL-CIO for 18 years, he is in the house, and he's talking about what I think would be a fair description, anti-union bills at the Capitol that may have some traction. He's down there fighting his fight, but he may not be fighting with the force that's against his endeavors. But we'll find out. But he's making his case that unions are important and that they're not getting an undue amount of the goodies when it comes to negotiations with business in our state. Your thoughts, 877-217-5757. Carol in Jefferson. Carol, good morning. You're on.
Good morning, yes. In regards to this election this week, do we have any kind of endorsement on party officers of any kind? Is it just hard for me to find out information on who's going to help us?
All right. There are elections for State Central Committee, if you're a Democrat or a Republican. And the Central Committee ultimately determines who the chair of the party is. Now, most union members, I would say most are Democrats, but Tia Mills, the head of the Louisiana Association of Educators, says that quite often that's an assumption that perhaps skews the opinion, because obviously you represent a diverse group of people. You've got some Republicans and independents in your group as well.
Well, first of all, I tell everybody, I don't work for Democratic Party. I don't work for the Republican Party. We work with people who are like-minded and want to elevate the lives of working men and women in the state. I don't care what party they are. Traditionally, Democrats and their platform is much more sympathetic to working people, and that's true. But to answer his question, we have local affiliates across the state, which are called central labor bodies. Those seats on the central council line up with House of Representatives seats. And so those central bodies have made recommendations to their members based on the location they are and the location of the candidates running for those seats. That's not something we did at a state level.
Louisiana is a right-to-work state, and as a result, workers can opt out of union membership, but unions may still bargain on the behalf of its employees, and if HB 572 passes, it would create a ban on public employees engaging in collective bargaining over benefits and workplace conditions in most cases. So would this be a devastating blow to unions?
Well, let's go back to the right to work, which don't we have anybody a right to work, but what most people don't understand is that if a union has a collective bargaining agreement for a unit of people, say they're carpenters, and the contract is for the carpenters, and they have 20 people. Yep, they don't have to pay the dues. But under federal law, the union has to represent them. They have to ensure that they get the same working conditions, they get the same pay, they get the same benefits. So they get to enjoy all of the fruits of the collective bargaining, all of the fruits of the union, depending that, you know, the agreement is upheld in their behalf. They just don't have to pay for it, which means the other members have to pay for it.
877-217-5757 is your number for Lewis Wren. And Bill in Opelousas, you're on the air with Lewis.
Good morning, guys. Do y'all believe that the American people shouldn't be divided into parties if they're representing the people? This is where we go wrong at every time.
I had just told a lady who's with us this morning that I had told somebody the other day, when they go to Congress, run for whatever party, they ought to be Americans when they get there. We ought not allow anybody to be a Democrat or Republican, or independent or anything while they're in Congress. You ought to be an American.
Well, that's what it's all about, though.
Well, unfortunately, it seems more that, particularly in Washington, they legislate what promotes the party and the interest of the American people become second.
Well, if you're a member of a party and that party helps you get to the dance, there's an expectation that you're going to toe the line. Bill Cassidy's about to find this out because he didn't toe the line, and some say he made a courageous vote to impeach Donald Trump and to uphold the election that Trump lost while all the other Republicans went the other way. But he'll probably give up his Senate seat as a result of this.
Well, but Congressman Graves, he followed the path, and they don't seem to be too kind
of
him.
Well, it's not working
days.
Out well for him, but he made some other moves that were not productive to his electoral success, but he's still in the game. He's got $4 million, so yeah. I wouldn't count him out.
Well, they haven't been kind to him, his own party. Being in the Louisiana legislature is not a well paid job. I don't know what cloud it gets you someplace else, but if you can't go there and make decisions on what you think is morally best and right, it's not worth the money. Mm-hmm. We are seeing the full effects of term limits. You know, people who have expertise, they have experience, they have been through the process. That takes time. Most of the people who get elected, you know, this is not something they've done on a regular basis, and there's a learning curve. But with these term limits, it's almost like you really learn the job, you got to go. And so you end up with people who get pounded from 100 different sides by 100 different issues that they're not really experts at. This is why it's important that the union is the voice for the working people. You know, they've never heard the story of, oh, how is this going to affect the school teacher? How is this going to affect the fireman? And having somebody there, you know, we can't force anybody to vote one way or another. But we can go to the table and say, we would like you to understand that if you do A, it's very likely B might happen and C might happen, and I don't think those are what you intended to do. That's all we really do at the Capitol on behalf of working people.
All right. Now we segue to the national scene. The 40-hour work week has been a standard in our country for more than 8 decades. Senator Bernie Sanders, and he's not alone, but he's leading the charge, the independent from Vermont who caucuses with Democrats. He's introduced a bill that would shorten to 32 hours the amount of time Americans would be allowed to work before they're owed overtime, 32 hours. What's your take on this?
Well, I think it's a great idea, whose time may have not come yet. I can see some, and there are some European companies. We have some employees at a plant here that sold goods to a European country. They came in, did what they called an audit, and were very upset that American workers work so many hours. But it's just a different mindset. Nobody at that plant wanted us pushing to cut their hours. We have families who struggle on 40 hours a week. We have kind of a mindset here that we would have to worry if 32 hours became full-time employment, would certain companies cut them to 24 hours to keep from providing them mm-hmm. the benefits? Without a living wage or a much higher minimum wage, I just don't know that economically people could live on that these days. It would cause mm-hmm. a lot of financial problems for them.
Mark Logan writes, "We cannot defeat Russia while working only 32 hours a week." Well, by the way, Russia is not even in the top 10 when it comes to gross domestic product, about $1.7 trillion. That's behind Canada and Italy and France and India. but it isn't even close. Germany's now the number three economy in the world, by the way. Germany. It's past Japan. And the U.S. is, with Russia, with its puny $1.7 trillion. The U.S. GDP, let's see what the latest numbers are for the United States, $23.3 trillion. We're doing pretty well of beating the Russians, aren't we?
Yes. And what most people don't understand, over time, its original purpose was not to compensate workers. It was to deal with unemployment, that if they put a cap on the number of hours, that was a full work week, and employers had to pay time and a half, rather than work people 50 or 60 hours, they would hire other people. In the current unemployment, that's going to be a problem. We don't, you know, have a lot of workforce that's laying idle that you know, we could fill those openings with.
877-217-5757, another segment with Louis Wren, head of the Louisiana AFL-CIO. Should we have a 32-hour work week? We'll talk more about it when we return. This is Jim Inkster. You're listening to Talk Louisiana. Your number is 877-217-5757, another segment with Louis Wren, head of the Louisiana AFL-CIO. A flurry of bills that would change the way unions do business, or where they operate, or in store at the Capitol, and we'll see where they go, and we'll follow this with Louis. I'm sure he'll be back, at least if we hope, and we count on him to come back again soon. But there's also much percolating on the national scene, and Bernie Sanders, the Democrat from Vermont, he caucuses with the Democrats, although officially he is an independent. And remember, he ran for president a few times as a Democrat. Has introduced a bill that would reduce the standard work week from 40 to 32 hours a week. Employers would be prohibited from reducing their workers' pay and benefits to match those lost hours. What do you think? 877-217-5757. And a companion bill by Democratic Congressman Mark Takano of California is likely doomed in the GOP-controlled House, so it's doubtful this is going anywhere. But as Louis Wren said, it's the start of a conversation. Senator Bill Cassidy of Louisiana said paying workers the same wages for fewer hours would force employers to pass the cost of hiring more workers along to consumers. Does Senator Cassidy have a point, Louis?
Well, it's amazing. We will talk about It costs a little more to pay an employee. Well, the cost of living's gone up for the employees. Nobody talks about the percentage of profit that folks are making, and often don't realize the wealth they enjoy is off the sweat of the working men and women, and you know, they just want a little fair share. I've been here around a long time, and if I'm paying you $400 a week, and they say I got to cut you to 32 and pay you $400, then I'll just lay you off and I'll hire you back next week and tell you you're getting $7 an hour, you know? Folks are here. I mean, we have a huge corporation here that's famous for taking their employees and telling them, we work you right up to you full time, but we're not going to let you be full time because then we'd have to give you health insurance.
Who does that?
I mean, it's no secret Walmart does that, but, I talked to the guy at Walmart. He said, I've worked here for several years. I was full time. They cut me to part time. They sent me right back to the same place I was. And I said, man, why you work here? He said, I got four kids. I don't have a choice. You know, I have to work. So, the good companies, the companies who want to take care of the employees, they do the right thing.
Walmart, of course, is one of the world's biggest companies. By the way, I once worked in store number 7 in North Little Rock, Arkansas. Store number 7. I'm looking at a layaway associate makes $9.49 an hour, but a senior technician, whatever that means, makes $31.75 an hour. So some people at Walmart do okay.
Oh, yeah. The full-time employees do fine. It's like I said.
But they don't want to have an abundance of full-time employees because they're trying to make a big profit for their stockholders.
They
want to
make a big splash that they built some art museum somewhere so that the average people could enjoy the art and It cost them $5 million, and it's like, once you give them health insurance, I think they'd probably enjoy that more than they would the art.
All right. Well, you're a good advocate for working people. Louis Wren, 877-217-5757, and talk at talklouisiana.org. That's how to reach him in our remaining time with him. And Helen Monroe asks about the, quote, illegals who are affecting American workers. Is that a big issue, these people crossing the border and, quote, getting our jobs? What do you make of that? Or is that much ado about nothing?
I have a very simple solution that will take care of all of that.
What is it?
Go after the, you don't even need to change the law. Just follow the federal law. Go after employers who are hiring undocumented workers. The fines are huge, and companies will quit doing it when the government starts enforcing the law. That's all it will take. If there's, as they, somebody said, if there's no sugar on the table, the ants won't come. So, you know, and look, there are a lot of legal avenues for immigrants to come work here, particularly those in the agricultural field. Hopefully the employers are following the law. They're supposed to pay them a competitive wage. They're allowed to come into the country to go to a specific place for a specific job for a set amount of time. And you know, that's the part that works. But if you're just trying to increase your profits by taking, you know, hiring undocumented workers because you can work them cheap and exploit them and then use them to exploit American workers, saying, I can get them so cheap, why should I pay you more? Well, federal government, who've taken all the authority away from the state to enforce this, go enforce the law and tell employers, if you work undocumented workers, we will prosecute you under the current law. Mm-hmm. And people will quit hiring them, and they'll quit coming.
A listener, Tom on Blue Bonnet, says many British companies have adopted a 32-hour work week. And I'm reading from an AP story. Say critics say a 32-hour work week might work for companies whose employees spend most of their time at computers or in meetings, but could be disastrous for production at manufacturing plants that need hands-on workers to keep assembly lines running.
Well, I mean, we've seen companies here who've gone to 4-day work weeks. It was 4-10s. We haven't seen the 32-hour work week, but if the manpower is available, mm-hmm. to tell the truth, it's probably easier to keep them running in continuous with a 32-hour work week and two crews than it is to have one crew on a 40-hour work week.
Well, in Louisiana, we have weather-related happenings that often affect a work week, and people get paid when there's a hurricane. But in Louisiana, whether it's, you know, if it's not a really bad hurricane, and by the way, we're always on the air during hurricanes. We don't stop.
And look, my unions don't stop. I've been involved from Katrina to numerous national disasters that hit the state of Louisiana where our firemen on their own time through their firefighters union have provided the food and the services across the community, along with our building trades folks and others. We're always out there. We were the first one in Lake Charles after that hurricane hit to set up a distribution center so that those local people would have gas to run their generators and food. People around this country have been more than generous to the people of the state of Louisiana. Anytime there's a disaster, sending it. And the union has been right there up front. Mm-hmm. You know, the other thing that most people don't realize, particularly in the building trades, our apprenticeship programs are the higher standard. They have national curriculums. Their credentials are accepted. Really become a training ground for the rest of the country. They love Louisiana workers here, but they also show it in their paycheck. Part of this, let's come back home. We'll come back home when you want to pay us like they pay us every place else. I've got pipe fitters, plumbers, carpenters, iron workers all right. spread all across the country because they're getting paid better there.
A few questions from those listening and responding online. Lindsay in Prairieville asked about Stephen Wagsback. He ran for governor. He didn't get 6% of the votes. He's your former adversary for a decade. I'm sure you were really disappointed he didn't do better.
Well, I would question anybody quit a job getting paid $500,000 to try and get one that pays
$130,000 actually.
Well,
I think his was like $600,000 too.
Well, but, I wouldn't count the
budget. But he landed on his feet as we knew he would. He's a able person, so I don't think this is the last dance. But you're right about Garrett Graves. Probably his biggest mistake would be endorsing Stephen Wagspack for governor, and he didn't win. And Jeff Landry did, and to the victor go the spoils.
Absolutely.
But we live in a country now that is evenly divided. When I say evenly divided, Democrats have won 7 of the last 8 presidential elections by virtue of the vote, although it's 5-3 in the Electoral College. And this time around, it's very doubtful that Donald Trump will win the overall vote, but he could win in the Electoral College, which would mean he'd be 0-3 in the vote and 2-1 in the Electoral College. Your thoughts about whether President Trump, former President Trump, is possibly the next president, and what this means for what you do?
Well, I never thought he'd win the first time, so I don't know that I'm a good predictor of that. The way I look at it truly is, there's those who are far to the right and those who are far to the left, and really the ones that make the decision are in the middle, whichever way they go.
You're in the middle?
I think I'm in the middle.
We always think we're in the middle. I think I'm in the middle. Well, I bet Donald Trump thinks he's in the middle, too.
You know, I had this conversation. I've known the lady for years. She's now the Secretary of the Workforce Commission. And it has to be a balance. Nobody is more of a cheerleader for business to be successful than labor, because if they're not viable, they're not profitable, then people can't make a decent living. You know, we're not anti-business, but it's the same thing in politics. The pendulum swings back and forth, but everybody does best when it's in the middle.
All right, here's a good question from another Tom, this one in Ascension Parish, asking about the bill for no permit for a concealed carry. What about companies banning guns in workplaces? Is that going to create more trouble with this Wild Wild West mentality we have right now?
Well, that Mike Foster came into office, and that was his number one priority. We're going to give good, honest people let them carry a weapon, a concealed weapon. And the first thing he did after that is put a sign on the state capitol and said, not here.
So, gun free. Yeah, gun free.
Yeah. Y'all don't carry a gun, just don't carry it around me. I suspect that there'll be provisions in there. As you see it right now, there's a lot of businesses that say no guns allowed. I suspect that's going to be a challenge that the employers are not going to want the people on the production line all armed. We've had this conversation when it was about having a weapon in your vehicle parked in the company parking lot.
Well, it's a conversation that is just beginning. Yes. We'll be calling on you again soon. Thank you, Lewis Wren. Back after this. This is Jim Inkster. Thank you for joining us for Talk Louisiana. Robin Dow is producing, and your number is 877-217-5757. We turn the page and have a new topic for our last segment, and it's one that I'm sure we'll be addressing as things percolate regarding TikTok. The House last week passed a bill with a broad bipartisan support to force TikTok's Chinese owner to either sell the popular video app or have it banned in the U.S., and the move escalates a showdown between Beijing and Washington over the control of a wide range of technologies that could affect national security, free speech, and the social media industry. The vote was 352 to 65. We don't know how it's going to do in the Senate, but Senator Bill Cassidy of Louisiana says he's on board. He wants to ban TikTok if it's owned by the Chinese. What are your thoughts? 877-217-5757. We're joined in studio by Madison Smith. She is a senior mass communication student from Jackson, Mississippi. She'll be graduating in December. And she is active on TikTok, as are 170 million of her closest friends in our country. And this would have a sweeping impact on a lot of people's personal habits. How active are you on TikTok?
I'm very active on TikTok. I definitely use it almost every day. Almost to a point where it's become a search engine for me to some extent. I get on TikTok, I look up cooking recipes. I get on TikTok, I look up help for my homework. I look up inspiration. So Yeah, it's definitely something that I use on a daily basis.
So you would miss it if it were not there, huh?
Oh, most definitely. I would miss TikTok as well as, you know, other young people that are around me, friends, classmates, other students, for sure.
Well, this is an amazing bipartisan move. And of course, lawmakers, they're always aware of their constituents. And when half of them are doing something that would be taken away from them, potentially, it could make a difference on the electoral scene. The New York Times' David Sanger put it this way: in a Capitol where Republicans and Democrats agree on virtually nothing, it was notable last week when the House overwhelmingly declared that TikTok poses a grave risk to national security, that it must be forced to sell its U.S. operations to a non-Chinese owner. So do you view this as political propaganda? How are you affected, if at all, by any political messages or messages otherwise from TikTok?
Well, I always like to believe that the government has our best interests as a country. So understandably, if TikTok is posing a threat, you know, to, you know, United States national security, I would hope whatever needs to be done is done and sought through. But it will be sad to see TikTok leave us. It's definitely become something that is almost a necessity for young people. Depending on what you like and engage with, it can influence what you see on TikTok. So I know that TikTok has given many young entrepreneurs a platform to promote and grow their businesses in a way that I arguably like to say we've never seen before.
I don't know that Senator John Kennedy has taken a position on this, but Bill Cassidy says he's on board. Many in the Senate are keeping their cards close to their vest. Chuck Schumer, the Senate Majority Leader from New York, has not decided whether to move this forward. And as the leader, he determines what legislation gets a vote. But as I stated, it has political ramifications in an election year. So would you potentially vote for or against a candidate based on their position on TikTok?
You know, personally, as much as this has been talked about, I'm still developing an opinion on that. I definitely think that it's a great thing for the young people right now, promoting businesses and being able, this is how a lot of people make their money. This is how people are being able to promote things and get their businesses out there. We saw the rise of TikTok during COVID and being able to push, you know, different narratives, being able to, you know, like I said, again, promote their businesses. So for me, I see so much positivity in the social media platform. But again, there are those downsides that I can also agree with. So that's something that I'm still having to think about myself.
Representative Steve Scalise, Republican of Louisiana, says the House is on the right track on this. And Donald Trump, on the other hand, who is a president, issued an executive order against TikTok, has now said that he likes TikTok. He says that banning TikTok would benefit Facebook, an enemy of the people, he calls it. So what about how TikTok compares with other social media opportunities?
Well, you know, obviously TikTok is a social media platform that's used for creating and sharing and discovering stories, short stories. And a lot of people utilize it in so many different ways. It doesn't always have to be from like a business promoting perspective. There's funny stuff, you know, you can pick out whatever TikTok community you want to be a part of. And I think what makes TikTok so different from other social media platforms is how the content is pushed out. If you're on Instagram, if you don't follow me, you won't see my content. You won't see the things that I post. If you're not my Facebook friend, you don't have to see what I post. Whereas on TikTok, that pushes out content for everyone to see. It's on everybody's For You page, right, is what they refer it to.
So your friends, are they as much into this as you?
Absolutely. It's really hard to come by any young person these days that isn't an active user on TikTok.
How much time do you spend on TikTok, Madison?
Oh, wow. Mr. Jim, I spend a lot more time on TikTok than I would actually like to say. It's definitely something that you need to use in moderation. I think that's one of the arguments that people want to express when it comes to young people and the amount of time that they do spend on it. But I do think that's when other things come into play, and using it in moderation, and make sure you're just using social media in general responsibly.
And how do your professors react if you're on TikTok in class?
Well, Mr. Jim, I've never had that problem because I do use TikTok in moderation, so I'm not on it in class. But, you know, I think
some other people cheat, though. I bet they go and they're on it sometimes.
You know, I do believe that. And I've actually seen it before, but I think that's with any social media and phones in general, actually. You know, coming into this generation with technology, period, just texting on your phone can be an issue, especially in the classroom setting.
Well, there is a real fear in Washington about the might of the Chinese empire. And at the same time, many of these same lawmakers are closing up to Vladimir Putin. What do you make of the national politics of this? When you wake up in the morning, do you think about how people in Beijing or Moscow might affect your life?
Honestly, Mr. Jim, no. That isn't something that I think about often every day, which is why this is such an important topic, something that's interesting because it is getting people talking. It's got me thinking. It's got my gears grinding, thinking about different things like this.
So you are 23?
Yes, sir.
Did you vote in the last election?
Yes, sir.
You did? You voted in 2020. Okay. So you would have been 19 then. That would have been your first election, right?
Yes, sir. That was my first election.
Are your classmates, for the most part, are they active? Are they voting?
The people that I surround myself with, I do like to think, you know, birds of a feather flock together and like-minded people hang around like-minded people. So that's something that I believe in and the people that are around me also as well.
How much are you influenced by what you read? You're obviously a consumer of TikTok. Does that really affect your opinion on something potentially?
You know, as much as I want to disagree with something like that and say, you know, I have a mind of my own, that doesn't influence me anyway, that wouldn't be the truth. Most definitely, social media and in specific TikTok does influence different ways that I think, but that's why I think it's important to always do your research, and TikTok shouldn't only be utilized as a search engine. It's not Google. It's not the facts all the time. You definitely have to do your research and, you know, make sure you're aware of what's true and what's not true and what you're reading, and that's an argument within itself every single day.
What sources of information do you use independent of TikTok? What other media outlets do you consume?
Well, for entertainment, I use Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, or now known as X. But when it comes to actually getting my factual information, I prefer to watch the news. I like CNN. But you don't always hear that every day when it comes to young people anymore. They kind of see what they see on social media and take that and run. And, you know, those headlines. It's a lot of hard to even hear people read the rest of the article sometimes. They just kind of see that front headline and, you know, that's pretty much it.
Well, you're a mass communication student, so you might be consuming more than most. But CNN, what do you read independent of TikTok as far as news opportunities?
As far as news, when it comes to social media, I do follow the other news outlets on social media. So kind of the same thing. Sometimes they post a little bit after it's aired on television. But I definitely follow a lot of the different news outlets on their social media pages, just so I know that it's factual as well.
Would it be fair to say, Madison, that you get most of your information off your phone?
It's absolutely fair. It actually is almost, I would say 80% is where I get majority of my daily news outlets. I have the news app. I get the notifications, follow local news stations. And that's pretty much where just being able to quickly read it. It is so convenient rather than you having to sometimes sit down and turn on the TV and listen.
Are you generally inclined to believe something when you read it on your phone? Or do you say, I don't know if this passes the smell test?
I'd like to say that in the beginning of time of when social media was first introduced to me in a way where I was actually able to comprehend, you know, what I was reading, it started off as believing everything that I saw. And, you know, but of course, as the conversation has rose about, you know, everything that you read is not true, now I do kind of turn my eyebrow up a little bit and do a little extra research. And is this really true? Is this really what's going on?
You're active to the point where you've voted last time. You say you will vote this time. Are you registered in Louisiana or Mississippi?
I'm registered in Mississippi.
So you have to
go back home, hit that road, and go.
Three hours to vote.
It's important.
And Mississippi, of course, is a state much like Louisiana with a lot of challenges, a lot of opportunities. And it's young people like you who will determine where we go from here. So.
Yes, sir.
We will see what happens with TikTok. Thanks for sharing your insights.
Thank you so much.
Remember the name, Madison Smith, senior mass comm student at Southern University. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you.
And until tomorrow, for Robin Dow, I'm Jim Inkster. Thanks for listening. Stay safe and stay tuned.